We've reached that time on a Thursday where we get our view from the north. And, of course, our guests covering the Blazers, Ducks, mix in a little Oregon State, back at the Oregonian on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress checks in. Team Fentress, have a delightful Thanksgiving.
We did. We had turkey and all the trimmings and watched the Bears win a football game. So, yeah. You know, the Bears are 4-7, but they're only 2-7 against the NFL.
Oh, who the Detroit Lions?
They beat the Lions twice.
I got.
I don't know if that counts.
So
does
technically, as the Knicks and Bulls are tipping off, should we even be speaking now? I mean, are we breaking any kind of New York Chicago code here?
I think we kind of are. So you better hurry this up.
You know, I was. I was watching the Raiders over the weekend, and I was like, I saw a 24, and it started a conversation about retired numbers and how some franchises don't, and in college it's kind of rare. And I've been talking about it all week, and I was like, so if the University of Oregon had a Duck football ring of honor, kind of like the Packers and the Cowboys, and for the first class, you had to pick three from history. And they said, Fentress, who are we going with? Who I'm curious, who would be your debut trio?
I would go with the three who finished the highest in the Heisman voting. And so that would be Marcus, LaMichael, and Joey, right?
Whoa, good one. You're the first one who, I mean, those guys have obviously gotten a lot of play, but not under that kind of umbrella. Huh, that's a good one. I like that. The winners, if I had to pick, I'm such a lunatic. So my text line, Twitter, the calls here and the text, I went back and added it up. It would actually be Marcus, Joey, and Bilotti got a lot of love.
Ah, you got more than LaMichael?
Yeah. You know, he's also a Hall of Famer and, you know, pretty important to the program. And the other names that surfaced, you know, more than occasionally, LaMichael way up there, Fouts, Ahmad, Rich Brooks, Norm Van Brocklin, Mel Renfro. So, yeah, that's a reasonable trio for short.
I'm glad. So Bly's getting more votes than Chip.
Yeah, a couple people mentioned Chip, and I was like, you know, for pure entertainment and fun, it was a riot covering him. But, you know, there are some people within the program who have a little bit of a grudge because he did leave on sanctions. So, I mean, you really can't just hit the delete button on that, you know, just because we got to go to four major bowl games in a row. That I don't know how many points they give for that. But
well, so, I'm glad Bly is receiving more votes than Chip, if that's how I would go.
Right. So on your Twitter feed, the Duck Confidential podcast with James, I thought you brought up a good point. Sometimes you could check a box score and it's a little misleading. And in the Oregon State game, the Ducks were pretty much up two scores and in control. Yeah, there was the TD, the onsides, the TD. But accurate to say, aside from a little slip up, it was kind of a victory that you would say was in hand.
Well, considering that at 31-9, I tweeted that it was over with 10 minutes to go. And then all of a sudden Oregon State scores, and then gets onside kick and scores, and people are just all over me on Twitter. Shut up, Fentress, you jinxed us, blah, blah, blah. And I do have, like, I can possibly go back and study it, but I do have a way with like, making a declarative statement in a game, and then the other team comes back. But not comes back to win. There's a difference between making a rally and then rallying to win. I kept insisting, though, that mathematically speaking, it was still over. And I've only been wrong once doing that, and that was the Alamo Bowl, because I said it was over late second quarter, was 31-0, and then Vernon Adams got hurt. And then Charles Nelson fumbled the kickoff. So that's the only time. So barring injury, I've never been wrong. But anyway, yes, I mean, I thought they dominated them. I didn't think there was any way with 10 minutes to go that Oregon State was going to overcome a 22-point deficit and also keep Oregon from scoring again, right? So that's why I felt like it was over and that was clear who was dominant. Now, to Oregon State's credit, boom, they went down and scored, and they got the onside kick and then capitalized on that. So I give them credit for that, but still, I think you got to walk away feeling like one team was clearly way better than the other, regardless of the fact that the score ended up, you know, relatively close. So yeah, it was a good turnaround by them, given what happened to them at Utah. They came out looking completely fired up to erase that memory, build a new one against Oregon State, and then take that momentum into the championship game with a rematch with Utah on Friday.
Talking with Aaron Fentress, the Oregonian, you know, in talking about this rematch, I've heard some people say, well, could you make up 31 points? And I was like, you know, it was at Salt Lake. It was one of their biggest home games in program history. There was a lot of emotion honoring those two young men. And the Ducks played like crap. Utah did everything right. So how much of 2 weeks ago do you incorporate in how you see tomorrow playing out?
Well, I mean, these are two good but flawed teams, and you know, and like a lot of matchups, if one team has it one night and the other team doesn't, you can get a lopsided score. But I don't feel like Utah's 31 points better than Oregon at all. And I think playing at a neutral site, Oregon, you know, doing to Oregon State in terms of shutting down the run, which is what they need against Utah, I think gives hope that they can at least, you know, keep Utah from being as powerful as they were in the run. But for me, the biggest thing really is just the offense getting rolling. You know, they got blown out in that game because the offense didn't show, and that just compounded what was going on with the defense. If they show and they can run the ball, and then that obviously we all know makes Brown a way better player. He's not a carry you kind of player, but if he's playing off of a good running game, he can be very good. So I just sort of feel like they're the better team. They have the better talent overall, and I think they're going to have sort of almost the hunter's mentality in this game after having getting their butt kicked, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And playing at a neutral site is going to be huge. You know, Rice-Eccles is no joke. And I feel like Oregon's going to rebound and win this game.
We've got to deviate for a moment because I'm just thinking if the last time we talked a week ago Tuesday, I said, hey, check this out. By December 1st, Brian Kelly's going to be the LSU coach and Lincoln Riley is going to be the USC coach. You'd probably want to have me drug tested. But so especially impacting the conference, what was your take on Riley bolting Norman for Southern Cal?
Oh, wow. I mean, that was huge. You know, that's every major program's fantasy, right? You move on from someone and you want to steal an elite-level coach. And it's hard to do when they're already at an elite-level program, right? It just is. And Oklahoma's definitely a marquee, all-time great program. And USC just swiped them.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't – has Lincoln Riley talked about it much?
I have not heard a lot. I know they're buying him a $6 million house. Count me in on that deal.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Oklahoma's going to the SEC, or SEC, I'm sorry, SEC, yeah. Sorry. I was like, SECCYA? What? Anyway, they're going to the SEC, and so is Texas, which is funny to me because that I only think those programs are doing that because they know the playoffs are going to be expanded. Otherwise, you're setting yourself up for failure. But that conference is going to be just ridiculously stacked. And so some people are speculating that he chose the easier path going to USC, where your main competition is Oregon and UCLA, and you're obviously in the marquee program in the Pac-12, which USC still is. So anyway, the fact they were able to steal him, he's a great recruiter, he's going to flip some kids, he's going to probably steal some transfers from Oklahoma, he's going to get that thing turned around really quickly, and he's already proven is a huge get for USC, and it's big for the conference. The conference is more interesting and better when USC is good. And, you know, Oregon's going to win the Pac-12 title, I believe, but they're going to do it in a really, really soft year. There's only going to be two teams in the conference finishing in the top 25, Oregon and Utah. I imagine Utah will stay in the top 25. And USC and Washington, two traditional powers who are sometimes up and down lately, or were both down, really down, bad. And that that hurts Oregon. If Oregon seriously wants to win national titles, it needs to go through a conference where you're beating a strong UW team and you're beating a strong USC team, not you're getting blown out by Utah and hoping for a rematch win. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it strengthens the conference and gives you a better chance. So at the end of the season, you're not sitting there going, oh, man, they may be 12-1, but, man, the conference is soft, and they're going to play a weak ASU or a mediocre Utah team in the conference championship. You want them playing a 10-2 USC team in the conference championship, because when you win that game and you're 12-1, you're going to the playoffs. So I think it's good for everybody.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think USC and Washington started in the top 20 and absolutely came unglued to the point where they had to fire their coaches during the season. Just nuts.
Right. Isn't that wild?
It's unprecedented. Talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian, a thought on the Beavs, because when the season started, I think expectations outside of Corvallis was limited. I went back and looked at the original media poll. Only Arizona and Washington State got less support. You know, they lost the first game, then they got bowl eligible, then they beat Arizona State. So 7 wins, 2 bad losses late. What's a fair evaluation under where they are season 4 under Jonathan Smith?
Oh, I think despite losing the Colorado Cal game, I think that was disappointing, but it doesn't matter. They haven't been in a bowl game since 2013, you know? Josh Huff was a Duck. Why go back that far, right? So the fact that they got the 7 this year, the fact that their quarterback's young, they're going to get him back, and Jebbia can come back and compete there. You got some other young talent that's going to be back. They're starting to get some headway in recruiting. I think they got a commit from a 4-star kid from Florida, which I just stumbled upon a second ago. And the transfer portal is going to be huge for someone like Oregon State, because if there's a kid out there at a position who maybe is not getting enough playing time and based on their estimation because they're just at a program that's just too deep, and they can transfer someone to start right away, and they're a 4-star kid that maybe got squeezed out, Oregon State can be holding up their hand going, hey, we'll take it. We got a spot for you right here, pal. So I think they can get a few guys like that each year and try to elevate things. So, no, this is awesome. I've lived in the state for a long time, and it's always more fun when both Oregon and Oregon State are good, at least good. And it looks like we're back to that point.
No, I agree 100%. I think it's just awesome for the rivalry. And last thought, the Blazers beat Denver, lost 3 straight on the road, and then I saw you say it on Twitter, that scintillating game against Detroit. Lillard down for a week and a half. And, of course, the thing is, they're 500, but they're just a game out of fourth. So I've been trying to tell people that the reasonable stance is, look, just stay tuned. It's going to be a roller coaster. Is that fair?
I know. Yeah, no, 100%. It's funny when I see people acting like the sky is falling. I'm like, dude, they're 11-11, not 7-15. Like, you know, to have some perspective. And like you said, they're a game out of four. Like, that's how tight things are. If you thought they were going to be like Golden State and Phoenix are, where they were, what, 18-3, and I think they're both 18-3 maybe, you know, that was unrealistic. So you shouldn't have been thinking that way anyway. So the fact that you're within striking distance of fourth means that there's a bunch of other teams in the West who are middling around 500 as well, right? And who's Portland to not be one of those teams when you have all the new changes going on, right? They've been great at home, which is a good sign. Then they struggle on the road. Now, you're supposed to be worse on the road. You're not supposed to be that worse. Like, you're supposed to be 10-1 versus 1-10. But, I mean, would you be happier if they were 7-4, 4-7? I mean, I don't know. You prefer 10-1 and 4-7, but they're just not there yet. And you just got to keep hoping that, you know, the next 10 or 15 games they continue to improve. Maybe Lillard being out will help the rest of the guys get better. Not relying on him as much, and then he comes back. He's only going to be out for probably 4 games. Well, he's going to be reevaluating about 4 games, so hopefully it'll turn around the injury well. So, no, I think it's – I don't understand anyone who's freaking out right now. I think you got to let it play out, because you're 1 6- or 7-game win streak away from being 6 or 7 games over 500. And if you are that at any point in the next 2 months, you're going to be in the top 4 based on how things are going. So – I think they're fine where they are. As long as you're around 500 by the All-Star break, even still, you're still in good position, because it doesn't look like anyone's really going to take off and join Golden State and Phoenix at this point. I mean, maybe Utah, but after that, everyone else is just sort of floundering.
All right, and more importantly, with 7 minutes to go in the first, it's 9-9 Bulls and Knicks. So I just want to make sure we got our priorities straight. folks, he's Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, always a pleasure. Be well. Enjoy the weekend. And always curious to see what's going to be on tap next week.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Take it easy.